The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 3, Part 2. When they had stood for a while without speech, gazing over the sea, Gro spake and said, "Consider how, as day now dieth in yonder chambers of the west, so hath the glory departed from Witchland." But the Red Foliot answered him not, being in a study. Then Gro said, "Though Demon Land lieth where thou sawest the sun descend, yet eastward out of Witchland must thou look for the morning splendor. Not more surely shalt thou behold the sun go up thence to-morrow than thou shalt see shine forth in short season the glory and honor and power of Witchland. And beneath her destructive sword her enemies shall be as grass before the sickle." The Red Foliot said, "I am in love with peace and the soft influence of the evening air. Leave me, or if thou wilt stay, break not the charm." "O Red Foliot," said Gro, "art thou in love with peace indeed? So should the rising again of Witchland tune sweet music to thy thought, since we of Witchland love peace, nor are we stirrers up of strife, but the demons only. The war against the ghouls, whereby the four corners of the earth were shaken, was hatched by Witchland." "Thou speakest," said the Red Foliot, "clean against thine intention, a great praise of them. For whoever saw the like of these man-eating ghouls for corruption of manners, inhuman degeneration, and deluge of iniquities? Who every fifth year from time immemorial have had their grand climacterical year, and but last year break forth in never-imagined ferocity? But if they sail now, 'tis on the dark lake they sail, grieving no earthly seas nor rivers. Praise Demon Land, therefore, who did put them down forever." "I make no question of that," answered Lord Gro. "But foul water, as soon as fair, will quench hot fire. Sore against our will did we of Witchland join with the demons in that war, foreseeing, as hath been bloodily approved, that the issue must be but the puffing up of the demons, who desire no other thing than to be lords and tyrants of all the world." "Thou," said the Red Foliot, "wast in thy young days King Gaslark's man, a goblin born and bred, his very foster brother, nourished at the same breast. Why must I observe thee, a plain traitor against so good a king, whose perfidy the common people then did openly reprove, as I did well perceive, even as lately as last autumn, when I was in the city of Zajizakulo, at the time of their festivities for the betrothal of the king's cousin German, the Princess Armeline, unto the Lord Goldry Blushko, they carrying filthy pictures of thee in the street, singing of thee thus: 'It was pity one so witty, malcontent, leaving reason should to treason so be bent. But his gifts were but shifts void of grace, and his bravery was but knavery vile and base,'" said Gro, wincing a little. "The art of it agreeth well with the sentiment, and with the condition of those who invented it. I will not think so noble a prince as thou art will set thy sails to the wind of the rabble's most partial hates and envies. For the vile addition of traitor, I do reject and spit upon it. But true it is that, regarding not the god of fools and women, nice opinion, I do steer by mine own lodestar still. Howbeit, I came not to discourse to thee on so small a matter as myself. This I would say unto thee with most sad and serious entertain. Be not lulled to think the demons will leave the world at peace. That is farthest from their intent. They would not listen to thy comfortable words, nor sit at meat with us. So set be they to imagine mischief against us. What said Jus? Witchland was ever a flea. Ay, as a flea which he itcheth to crush between his fingernails. Oh, if thou be in love with peace, a short way lieth open to thy heart's desire. Naught spake the Red Folliot, gazing still into the dim reflections of the sunset, which lingered below a darkening sky where stars were born. Gro said softly, as a cat purring, "Where softening unctions failed, sharp surgery bringeth speediest ease. Wilt thou not leave it to me?" But the Red Folliot looked angrily upon him, saying, "What have I to do with your enemies? You are sworn to keep the peace, and I will not abide your violence nor your breaking of oaths in my quiet kingdom." Gro said, "Oaths be of the heart, and he that breaketh them in open fact is oft, as now, no breaker in truth, for already were they scorned and trampled on by his opposites." But the Red Folliot said again, "What have I to do with your enmities that set you by the ears like fighting dogs? I am yet to learn that he that hath a righteous heart and clean hands and hateth none must needs be drawn into the brawls and manslayings of such as you and the demons." Lord Gro looked narrowly upon him, saying, "Thinkest thou that the straight path of him that affecteth neither side lieth still open to thee? If that were thine aim, thou shouldst have bethought thee ere thou gavest thy judgment on the second bout. For clear as day it was to us, and to thine own people, and most of all to the demons, that the king played foul in that bout, and when thou calledst him victorious, thou didst loudly by that word trumpet thyself his friend, and unfriends to demonland. Mark'st thou not, when they left the hall, with what a snake's eye Lord Jus beheld thee? Not with us only, but with thee, he refused to eat and drink, that so his superstitious scruples may be unhurt when he proceeds to thy destruction. For on this are they determined. Nothing is more certain." The Red Folliot sank his chin upon his breast and stood silent for a space. The hues of death and silence spread themselves where late the fires of sunset glowed, and large stars opened like flowers on the illimitable fields of the night sky. Arcturus, Spica, Gemini, and the little dog, and Capella and her kids. The Red Folliot said, "Witchland lieth at my door. And Demonland? How stand I with Demonland?" And Gro said, "Also, tomorrow's sun goeth up out of Witchland." For a while they spoke not. Then Lord Gro took forth a scroll from his bosom and said, "The harvest of this world is to the resolute, and he that is infirm of purpose is ground betwixt the upper and the nether millstone. Thou canst not turn back. So would they scorn and spurn thee, and we witches likewise. And now, by these means only, may lasting peace be brought about, namely, by the setting of Gorice of Witchland on the throne of Demonland, and the utter humbling of that brood beneath the heel of the witches." The Red Folliot said, "Is not Gorice slain? And drank we not but now his Arvale, slain by a demon? And is he not the second in order of that line, who hath so died by a demon?" "A twelfth Gorice," said Gro, "at this moment of time, sitteth king in Carcy. O Red Foliot, know thou that I am a reader of the planets of the night, and of those hidden powers that work out the web of destiny. Whereby I know that this 12th king of the House of Gorais in Carsi shall be a most crafty warlock, full of guiles and wiles, who, by the might of his egromancy and the sword of Witchland, shall exceed all earthly powers that be. And, ineluctable as the leaven bolt of heaven, goeth out his wrath against his enemies. So saying, Gro stooped and took a glowworm from the grass, saying kindly to it, Sweeting, thy lamp for a moment, and breathed upon it, and held it to the parchment, saying, Sign now thy royal name to these articles, which require thee not at all to go to war, but only, in case war shall arise, to be of our party, and against these demons that do privily pursue thy life. But the Red Foliot said, Wherein am I certified that thou speakest not a lie? Then took Gro a writing from his purse, and showed thereon a seal like the seal of Lord Jus. And there was written, Unto Vol all love and trust, and fail not, when as thou sailest upon Witchland, to cast of 3 or 4 ships for the Foliot Isles, to put down those, and Bren the Red Foliot in his house. For if we get not the life of these worms churded out of them, the shame will stick on us for ever. And Gro said, My servant stole this from them while they spoke with thee in thine hall to-night. Which the Red Foliot believed, and took from his belt his inkhorn and his pen, and signed his royal name to the articles of the treaty proposed to him. Therewith Lord Gro put up the parchment in his bosom, and said, Swift surgery! Needs must that we take them in their beds to-night. So shall to-morrow's dawn bring glory and triumph to Witchland, now fixed in an eclipse, and to the whole world peace and soft contentment. But the Red Foliot answered him, My Lord Gro, I have signed these articles, and thereby stand I bound in enmity to Demonland. But I will not bewray my guests that have eaten my salt, be they never so deeply pledged mine enemies. Be it known to thee, I have set guards on your booths this night, and on the booths of them in Demonland, that no unpeaceful deeds may be done betwixt you. This which I have done, by this will I stand, and ye shall both depart to-morrow in peace, even as ye came. Because I am your friend, and sworn to your party, I and my Foliots will be on your side, when war is between Witchland and Demonland. But I will not suffer night-slayings, nor murders, in my isles. Now, with these words of the Red Foliot, Lord Gro was as one that walketh along a flowery path to his rest, and in the last steps a gulf yawneth suddenly athwart the path, and he standeth agape and disappointed at the hither side. Yet in his subtlety he made no sign, but straight replied, Righteously hast thou decreed, and wisely, O Red Foliot, for it was truly said, Let worthy minds ne'er stagger in distrust, to suffer death or shame for what is just. And that which we sow in darkness must unfold in the open light of day, lest it be found withered in the very hour of maturity. Nor would I have urged thee otherwise, but that I do thoroughly fear these demons, and all my mind was to take their plotting in reverse. Do then one thing only for us. If we set sail homeward, and they on our heels, they will fall upon us at a disadvantage, for they have the swifter ship. or if they get to sea before us, they will lie in wait for us on the high seas. Suffer us, then, to sail tonight, and do thou, on some pretext, delay them here for 3 days only, that we may get us home, or ever they leave the Foliot Isles. I will not gainsay thee in this, answered the Red Foliot, for here is naught but what is fair and just and lieth with mine honour. I will come to your booths at midnight, and bring you down to your ship. When Gro came to the witches' booths, he found them guarded even as the Red Foliot had said, and the booths of them of Demonland in like manner. So went he into the royal booth, where the king lay in state on a bier of spear-shafts, robed in his kingly robes over his armor that was painted black and inlaid with gold, and the crown of Witchland on his head. 2 candles burned at the head of King Gorais, and 2 at his feet, and the night wind blowing through the crannies of the booth made them flare and flicker, so that shadows danced unceasingly on the wall and roof and floor. On the benches round the walls sat the lords of Witchland, sullen of countenance, for the wine was dead in them. Balefully they eyed Lord Gro at his coming in, and Corineus sat upright in his seat and said, "Here is the goblin, father and fosterer of our misfortunes. Come, let us slay him." Gro stood among them with head erect, and held Corineus with his eye, saying, "We of Witchland are not run lunatic, my lord Corineus, that we should do this gladness to the demons, to bite each at the other's throat like wolves. Methinks if Witchland be the land of my adoption only, yet have I not done least among you to ward off sheer destruction from her in this pass we stand in. If you have aught against me, let me hear it and answer it." Corineus laughed a bitter laugh. "Hearken to the fool! Are we babes and milksops, thinkest thou? And is it not clear as day thou stoodest in the way of our falling on the demons, when we might have done so? Urging what silly counsels I know not, in favor of doing it by night? And now is night come, and we close prisoned in our booths, and no chance to come out them, unless we would bring a hornet's nest of foliots about our ears, and give warning of our intent to the demons and every living soul on this island. And all this has come about since thy slinking off and plotting with the Red Foliot. But now hath thy guile overreached itself, and now we will kill thee, and so end of thee and thy plotting." With that Corineus sprang up and drew his sword, and the other witches with him. But Lord Gro moved not an eyelid, only he said, "Hear mine answer first. All night lieth before us, and 'tis but a moment's task to murther me." Therewith stood forth the Lord Corund with his huge bulk betwixt Gro and Corineus, saying in a great voice, "Whoso shall point weapon gainst him shall first have to do with me, though it were one of my sons. We will hear him. If he clear not himself, then will we hew him in pieces." They sat down, muttering. And Gro spake and said, "First, behold this parchment, which is the articles of a solemn covenant and alliance, and behold where the Red Foliot hath set his sign manual thereto. True, his is a country of no might in arms, and we might tread him down and ne'er feel the leaving stick to our boot, and little avail can their weak help be unto us in the day of battle. But there is in these isles a meetly good road and riding place for ships, which if our enemies should occupy, Their fleet were most aptly placed to do us all the ill imaginable. Is then this treaty a light benefit where now we stand? Next, know that when I counseled you take the demons in their beds, instead of fall upon them in the Foliot's hall, I did so, being advertised that the Red Foliot had commanded his soldiers to turn against us or against the demons, whichever first should draw sword upon the other. And when I went forth from the hall, it was, as Corineus hath so deeply divined, to plot with the Red Foliot. But the aim of my plotting I have shown you on these articles of alliance. And indeed, had I, as Corineus vilely accuseth me, practiced with the Red Foliot against Witchland, I had hardly been so simple as return into the mouth of destruction when I might have bided safely in his palace. Now, when Gro perceived that the anger of the witches against him was appeased by his defence, wherein he spake cunningly both true words and lies, he spake again among them, saying, "Little gain have I of all my pains and thoughts expended by me for Witchland, and better it were for Witchland if my counsel were better heeded. Corin knoweth how, to mine own peril, I counseled the king to wrestle no more after the first bout. And if he had taken my rede, rather than suspect me and threaten me with death, we should not be now to bear him home dead to the royal catacombs in Carcy." Corin said, "Truly hast thou spoken." "In one thing only have I failed," said Gro, "and it can shortly be amended. The Red Foliot, albeit of our party, will not be one to attack the demons by fraud, nor will he suffer us smite them in these isles. Some fond simple scruples hang like cobwebs in his mind, and he is stubborn as touching this. But I have prevailed upon him to make them tarry here for 3 days' space, while we put to sea this very night, telling him, which he most innocently believeth, that we fear the demons, and would flee home ere they would be let loose to take us at a disadvantage on the high seas. And home we will indeed, ere they set sail, yet not for fear of them, but rather that we may devise a deadly blow against them, or ever they win home to Demonland." "What blow, goblin?" said Corineus. And Gro answered and said, "One that I will devise upon with our lord the king, Gorice the 12th, who now awaiteth us in Carcy. And I will not blab it to a wine-bibber and a dicer, who hath but now drawn sword against a true lover of Witchland." Whereupon Corineus leapt up in mickle wrath to thrust his sword into Gro, but Corund and his sons restrained him. In due time the stars revolved to midnight, and the Red Foliot came secretly with his guards to the witches' booths. The lords of Witchland took their weapons, and the men-at-arms bare the goods, and the king went in the midst on his bier of spear-shafts. So went they, picking their way in the moonless night, round the palace and down the winding path that led to the bed of the coombe, and so by the stream westward toward the sea. Here they deemed it safe to light a torch to show them the way. Desolate and bleak showed the sides of the coombe in the wind-blown flare, and the flare was thrown back from the jewels of the royal crown of Witchland, and from the armored buskins on the king's feet, showing stark, with toes pointing upward from below his bearskin mantle, and from the armor and the weapons of them that bare him and walked beside him, and from the black cold surface of the little river hurrying forever over its bed of boulders to the sea. The path was rugged and stony, and they fared slowly, lest they should stumble and drop the king. End of chapter 3.